B. Collins News and Comment. It's Monday, October 8th, 2018. It's my favorite brother's birthday. And I know my other brothers won't be offended by singling out my brother Dan, who is celebrating his birthday today in Chicago. Got to talk to him, and it was really gratifying. I have an important alert, and I have no idea how many listeners to the Peter B. Collins podcast there are in the Peach State of Georgia. But Greg Palast has issued a national alert based on his efforts to expose the purging of as many as 750,000 voters from the registration rolls in the state of Georgia. And this has occurred over the past year, and 1 in 10 voters may have an ugly surprise a month from now when they go to the polls on Tuesday. It's a little over a month. I don't want to be imprecise. the 6th of November. And they may find out that they are not registered. And some of these people moved to a different apartment in the same building. Others moved from one side of town to the other. Now, Greg Palast acknowledges that out of the 750,000 names that were purged, as many as 200,000 might be legitimate. People who've died, moved out of the state, or moved into a different congressional district, which would require them to re-register at their new address. But this is the product of good old-fashioned Karl Rove voter caging. The Secretary of State, who is a candidate for governor. Surprise, surprise. Well, Brian Kemp, he not only participated in the interstate cross-check list, but he actively led a campaign to purge voters using the caging techniques. And not all 750,000 of those people deserved to be taken off the rolls. And Greg Palast, in his true gumshoe investigative reporter style, he filed lawsuits to force the state of Georgia to release the list of purge voters, and then he bird-dogged and ambushed Mr. Kemp. And it wasn't terribly useful. He went to the Sprayberry Barbecue in Newman, Georgia, and apparently the goon squad, the security detail for Mr. Kemp, knew who Greg Palast is. And as soon as he approached him and asked him to release the list of the voters who'd been purged, he asked him, "Kemp, are you removing black voters from the voter rolls just so you can win this election?" And you probably know that his opponent would become the first African-American woman to become a governor of a state in American history. That's Stacey Abrams. And this is going to be a hard-fought battle, no doubt about it. The important bottom line here is if you live in Georgia, visit peterbcollins.com and click on the show file for today's podcast. And embedded in there is a link to Greg Palast's website where they have a search window and you can enter your name to find out if you're one of the Georgians whose name has been removed from the rolls because you may have gotten a postcard that looked innocuous, looked like junk mail, and you may have thrown it away or failed to return it to your local registrar of voters, and that is the basis under which they are caging you out of participation in this election. Now, there are many laws that this violates, and Palast is attempting to force the state of Georgia to comply with those laws. But as you know, they've got the power, and it's hard to remove it from their clenched fists. So again, Georgians, visit peterbcollins.com or go to gregpalast.com and see if your name is on the voter purge list. You only have until tomorrow, and I recognize that not everybody listens to my podcast on the first day that I release it. So let me be explicit. The deadline for voters to properly re-register in Georgia is Tuesday, October 9th, 2018. Good luck, peachheads. Now, that story displaced what I think should be the lead story on every news report worldwide today. That is that the latest report from the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is more alarming and earth-shattering than any of its predecessors. because what we are learning is that the planet is warming even faster than had been projected. They find that if greenhouse gas emissions continue at the current rate, the atmosphere will warm up by as much as 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit above the pre-industrial levels by the year 2040, inundating coastlines, intensifying droughts and poverty. So this is an escalation, an acceleration of the warming process. The new report shows that many of the effects that we have been concerned about will come not at the 3.6 degree mark that was kind of the original goalpost of a negative sort, but at 2.7. Avoiding the most serious damage requires transforming the world economy within just a few years. They say it could cost, the damage could cost at least $54 trillion over the next 20 or 30 years. And that's an effort to justify or rationalize carbon taxes of as much as $27,000 per ton by the turn of the next century. And, of course, these are issues that are non-starters with the Trump administration. As we'll mention in a moment, the elections in Brazil are advancing a far-right candidate who is Trumpish and wants to pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement. That is Jair Bolsonaro. Now, the new report says that to prevent 2.7 degrees of warming, greenhouse pollution must be reduced by 45% of 2010 levels by the year 2030 and 100% from the 2010 levels by 2050. And while California, you know, is on this path to shift to all renewable energy, this is very difficult to achieve, even if you have political consensus to take action. And we not only lack political consensus, we have people who are openly hostile toward accepting the science. And they're going to burn coal and fossil fuels and let the world implode. And, you know, I'm old enough, I'm 65 now. I'll probably still be alive in 2040. I hope so. But I may be witnessing a decline of the planet that has only been imagined before in science fiction. I want to recommend a podcast from my colleague Jeff Schechtman at Who, What, Why. He just posted an interview with Bethany McLean. She wrote the book about the Enron scandal, The Smartest Guys in the Room. And it is a review of fracking, talks a little bit about the financial and the carbon impacts of it. But it also looks at the issue of geopolitics and how it is shifting the dominance of the previous oil countries that had the highest level of exports and causing serious shifts. They also talk about the flimsy financial foundation. Fracking is very tenuously funded. And, of course, the venture capital people and Wall Street are very skittish about the future of fracking. And they're aware that it is contributing to global warming. And yet, their financial incentives are to ignore it and to keep booking those profits. I mentioned the election in Brazil. Jair, I think that's the correct way to pronounce his name, Jair Bolsonaro. You may have heard about this guy. He is representing the Conservative Party. He makes noises. He's been an elected official and has never been accused of corruption, which is quite rare in Brazil. But like Trump, he's running a populist campaign with evangelical support. His big pledge is to drain the swamp. And it is unfortunate that the Workers' Party of Lula da Silva, has been really corrupt. And it led to the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff and the interim presidency of this guy, Michel Temer. And Brazil is in very bad shape. And I'm sad to report that my friends there who own a small business, they have about 10 employees, they have given up on the Workers' Party and they're going to hold their nose and vote for Bolsonaro because they believe that the corruption issues are the most serious problem that Brazil faces and he has promised to clean it up. So it is a sea change in Brazil and it could have far-reaching impacts in our hemisphere. A couple of people went missing last week, high-profile people, and we'll cover two of them. First, journalist Jamal Khashoggi is a guy who used to be tight with the Saudi royal family. At one point, he was a top advisor to one of the Saudi royal officials. Prince Turki. And he went last week to pick up the documents that he needed to remarry at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey. And he went in about 1:30 in the afternoon. His wife-to-be was on the sidewalk waiting for him to emerge, and he never came out. She waited until midnight. She called the cops. She returned the next day. No word on where Jamal Khashoggi was. The Saudis just said, well, you know, he came in the building and he left right away. He got his papers and he left. But the Turks have done some investigation, and they are accusing the Saudis of executing Jamal Khashoggi inside the consulate in Turkey. They report that 15 individuals flew in from Saudi Arabia that morning under diplomatic cover, went to the consulate, and that there was a caravan of diplomatic vehicles that left later in the day. The strong theory is that he was killed in the consulate, his body was dismembered and removed in boxes or packages, I don't know, and that Saudi Arabia is denying this. They are supporting Turkey's investigation into the missing person. But the nation of Turkey, led by, of course, the strongman Recep Tayyip Erdogan, he demanded today that Saudi Arabia prove that Jamal Khashoggi left the Saudi consulate on his own. He said, do you not have cameras and everything of the sort? They have all of them. Then why do you not prove this? You need to prove it. Well, a government official representing the Saudis said, oh, you know, the cameras weren't turned on that day. Which only fuels the conspiracy theory that has been floated. Now, Khashoggi had recently become a columnist for the Washington Post. He had written commentaries critical of Mohammed bin Salman, the new strongman crown prince who is really running the country and who has been trying to purge what he calls corrupt people while he consolidates his power. And so we do not have confirmation of the whereabouts or the continued existence of Jamal Khashoggi. And this could turn into a real serious conflict between Turkey and Saudi Arabia. And would it cause the United States to rethink its deep loyalties to the Saudis under Trump? No fucking way. The other missing person is the international chief of the international police agency called Interpol. He is a Chinese security official named Meng Hongwei. And last Thursday, he flew to Beijing. His wife is living in Paris, where I believe he is posted for Interpol. And he sent her a cryptic text message with the symbol of a knife, which appeared to be the family distress call. And on Sunday, Chinese officials finally confirmed that they had taken Meng into custody, and he submitted his resignation to Interpol with immediate effect. And we're told that he is going to be accused of bribery by the government of Xi Jinping, but we do not have any details on that at this hour. So I don't know about you, but over the weekend, Facebook was experiencing all kinds of problems. Many of my friends said, if you get a friend request from me and we're already friends, ignore it. I must have gotten 50 of those. And then it crept into the messenger side of Facebook, and I started getting notes from people saying, ignore my Facebook requests. I hadn't received one, but I will ignore them. And by the way, I'm not either extending or accepting any Facebook requests at this particular time, because Facebook is still reeling from the hack of 50,000 accounts, 50 million accounts, I'm sorry. When they've got billions, the order of it all kind of gets lost. But Facebook is in the news for two reasons today. One is they desperately want you to know that they are fighting government demands to honor search warrants for the social media details of three Facebook users. The warrants target those who are described as anti-administration activists, who have spoken out at organized events, and who are generally very critical of this administration's policies. Now, you don't hear any descriptions of criminal intentions, criminal actions, or indictments or accusations of that sort. No, these are people who are unpopular with the Trump administration. One of them is Emilia Tallarico, who operated the Disrupt J20 page where Trump Inauguration Day protests were organized and discussed. Now, you probably know that the effort to convict the J20 protesters of felonies finally fell apart. And while there were a few early convictions, the vast majority of people who were accused have been released without any further legal proceedings. But the Justice Department is pressing its demands to, cause Facebook to cough up all of the social media content of these three individuals. And they're also pressing the DreamHost web server site. And I have mentioned that DreamHost is the company that I contract with to host the Peter B. Collins podcast. So I commend them for fighting the government efforts, but it does appear that the Justice Department is not relenting and will probably prevail. Now, the other issue that is really poor timing on the part of Facebook is they have a happy announcement today that they are introducing a new device called Portal. And it sits in your house. It's like an Amazon Echo. You give it a command like, "Hey, Portal, I want to talk to Peter B. Collins." And it will start a video chat with the person you name. The camera has the ability to track people when they enter the room. It can pan, widen, zoom automatically. The devices also include the always-listening Alexa, Amazon's voice assistant, and can be used to control smart home devices and offer weather information. Portal can also use your mobile phone's location to detect when you're home and available to answer a call. Don't you love that? Now, they don't seem to get the idea that Facebook is seen increasingly as a big brother, where you self-report your location and your points of view so that the government doesn't have to go to all that effort to collect it. And this is just such a tone-deaf move by Facebook, it's very hard to believe their timing. Meanwhile, the other big tech giant in the valley, Google, has announced it is closing most of its failing social media platform, Google Plus. I never understood it. I tried to use Google Plus for, broadcasts, for video chats and conferences, and it was so convoluted, and they require that you sign up for every damn one of their services in order to use, like Google Plus. Anyway, I'm happy that they are retiring it, but in March, Google discovered a bug in the Google Plus zone that would have allowed or could have allowed outside software developers like, Cambridge Analytica did with Facebook, you remember that, to learn the names, email addresses, occupations, genders, and ages of Google users. Now, the company said that it's not aware that any outsider discovered that bug and made improper access. But a two-week-long review of Google Plus found that up to 500,000 users may have had their data exposed to developers of 400 applications. In a moment, we'll recap the debacle that led to the Saturday night swearing-in of Brett Kavanaugh as the latest Associate Justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. But before we do that, I want to thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. People like John Morgan and our good friend Jerry Frescia, who is an expat living near Lake Como in Italy. Jerry just renewed his annual subscription. Thank you very much. Then there's Joe Carson, the whistleblower from the Department of Energy, who's a longtime supporter of this podcast. And let's mention Cliff Johnson and Carl Howard. They each kick in $5 a month, setting a great example for you. And if you want to follow that example, just visit peterbcollins.com. Click on the menu tab, then pull it down, click on Become a Subscriber. When you land on the sign-up page, it's easy. You can choose $5, $10, $20 a month, our $50 annual subscription for a new subscriber, giving me an address in the continental U.S. You earn the bonus gift. It's John Dist's new rock and roll CD called American University. I'd love to send you a copy. So I'm kind of working backwards. First reaction to the Kavanaugh confirmation and swearing in, then a look at those events, and then the immediate events preceding it, starting on Friday afternoon. And then I have some comments from listeners and others I want to share with you. So, first of all, Gerald Nadler, who is the humorless ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee. I only say humorous because I've interviewed the guy a couple of times, and he does not have a lighthearted side. But he is serious as a heart attack that if the Democrats regain control of the House, he will become chair of the Judiciary Committee, and he will launch investigations into Brett Kavanaugh. Now, some people believe that the timing of commentary like this may help Republicans. We'll get to that in a moment. The other question to me is, we know that the government will no longer investigate Brett Kavanaugh. It's over. He's been confirmed, and they don't care. Not the people running the government today. But will the media investigations continue? Will Michael Avenatti's client, will her claims be heard? Will we hear more from the people who flatly said that Brett Kavanaugh lied? From people who were former roommates at Yale, and others who knew him as a heavy drinker and a guy who got angry and abusive when he drank? That's an open question. Because if the media continues to follow the threads that have been exposed in the Kavanaugh hearings, then it could form the basis for ultimately impeachment of Brett Kavanaugh. And the same people who put forth the new book called The Constitution Demands It, Making the Case for Impeachment of Trump, and that is a nonprofit called Free Speech for People. They have launched a petition today over at impeachbrett.org, and they are calling on the House Judiciary Committee to begin immediate hearings on whether to impeach Kavanaugh on multiple counts of sexual assault, perjury, and bringing the judiciary into disrepute. And John Bonifaz, who is co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, is leading this charge. We spoke to Ron Fine, who is the legal director at that same organization, in a podcast just a few weeks ago about the impeachment of Trump. So there is an effort out there, and you can support it if you wish. But consider this at this particular time. Trump said today that it's an insult to the American people for Democrats to consider impeaching his boy, St. Brett Kavanaugh. The way they really tortured him and his family, I thought it was a disgrace. A brilliant jurist, a man who did nothing wrong, a man that was caught up in a hoax that was set up by the Democrats using the Democrats' lawyers, and now they want to impeach him? Well, using the language hoax is certainly going to offend a lot of people who believe Christine Blasey Ford. But we do have to be aware of the blowback that is there potentially. And that many people who support Trump, who believe that this was a hoax, that this was a late-breaking political hit designed to smear their guy, and that it's all just fantasy by Democrats, they have to be in such deep denial. They have to ignore so much obvious evidence that this guy is a big fat liar. But here's Trump, one of his rallies over the weekend. It was all made up. It was fabricated. It was a disgrace. And then Trump said, I think a lot of Democrats are going to vote Republican. The main base of the Democrats have shifted so far left that we'll end up being Venezuela. Now, as you know, that is just so cartoonish. Because I'm well to the left of the Democratic establishment. And it is not a leftist party. It's nothing like Venezuela or anything else you want to try to conjure up. But that kind of language works for the far right. I hear it from Rush Limbaugh all the time, denouncing libtards and people like me who just have some deep terminal virus. Oh, yeah. How about the God Squad? They were just ecstatic that their boy, Brett Kavanaugh, was confirmed on Saturday. And there was a big meeting of the evangelical group called the Council for National Policy, which operates covertly and brings together faith-based conservatives to discuss political strategy. I wonder if there was anybody there with one of those WWJD hats. What would Jesus do? Would Jesus celebrate the elevation of a liar, a man accused of sexual improprieties, a man who distinguished himself as intemperate, highly political? Would Jesus support his elevation to the court? Well, Clarence Thomas's wife, Ginny, was there. Nikki Haley, U.N. ambassador, was there. Former Senator Jim DeMint was there. And Jim Jordan, the congressman from Ohio who wants to be speaker, if he can just get those pesky allegations from his stint as the wrestling coach at Ohio State, where he's accused of repeatedly ignoring the reports of individuals who were sexually molested. Well, Jim Jordan was there, too. And these people are so remarkable that they can call themselves devout Christians while supporting a president like Trump who lies repeatedly, who has his own sexual problems that are in full display. And they had no problem with the $12 million from the dark money group Judicial Crisis Network used to promote Judge Kavanaugh and attack his accusers. And this is just one of many deep hypocrisies that reign across America today. That those who embrace the Bible and talk so much about Jesus and the influence of God are operating like the lowest form of pagan, who they all feel superior to. Also, interesting analytics that have been going on that demonstrate that we are about to have a majority on the Supreme Court, if Trump gets one more nomination, of people who would have been nominated and confirmed by a political party that received minority support. And they used election fraud, gerrymandering in the House, and other techniques to project their power across the rest of us who comprise the majority. So a guy, let's see who it is here. He did a study at Trinity College, Kevin McMahon. And he said the 54 senators who voted to elevate Gorsuch to the court had received about 54 million votes. The 45 who opposed him got 73 million votes. That's 58% to 42%. So this is not just a margin of error. It's not just that the Republicans have a slight edge, which would be represented by their count in the Senate. They have power highly disproportionate to the votes that they get under our corrupt system. And we are learning that it was Don McGahn who quarterbacked the operation, who rewrote with Brett Kavanaugh his speech when he came out of the box that Thursday afternoon, angry, shouting down Democrats, asking them about their drinking habits. He was completely intemperate. And it was McGahn who basically channeled Trump and his compulsive lying, his misogyny, what I call the Trump virus, which carried the day. And then there was the complicity of Susan Collins, the senator from Maine who poses as a moderate Republican, an endangered species indeed. And the pile of rationalizations and the intellectual gibberish that she spouted in a 45-minute floor speech on Friday afternoon in the Senate, I just found deeply offensive when I wasn't laughing. Protecting the right to choose an abortion is important to her, Collins said. Judge Kavanaugh, his views on honoring precedent would preclude attempts to do by stealth that which one has committed not to do overtly. She trusts this guy. Listen to this. Despite the turbulent, bitter fight surrounding his nomination, my fervent hope is that Brett Kavanaugh will work to lessen the divisions in the Supreme Court so that we have far fewer 5-4 decisions. Now, parse that. First of all, Brett Kavanaugh is not a unifying personality. He is a political hack who was put on the court to make sure that there are more 5-4 decisions and that he's the fifth vote to shift this country even further to the right. And if Susan Collins supports his confirmation and wants fewer 5-4 decisions, then she wants a Supreme Court that has 6, 7, 8, or 9 conservatives. It is just bizarre. Want to recommend a piece at Consortium News today by my old friend Marjorie Cohn. She's a retired professor of constitutional law from San Diego, and she lists 4 or 5 points where Brett Kavanaugh is expected to advance the interests of the wealthy and corporate powers in this country. And the most critical one is Gamble versus U.S., which may be up for oral arguments very soon. If the justices move in that direction, they will basically eliminate the limit on double jeopardy. And the practical consideration is that so far, Bob Mueller is investigating Trump for federal violations. And if Trump is accused, well, he might be able to pardon himself or those who would provide testimony against him on a federal level. But currently, he would still be vulnerable to state-level prosecution, and his pardon is not effective on state crimes. But if the justices narrow the scope of the double jeopardy clause, state authorities will not likely be able to file criminal charges after Trump had exercised his pardon power in a federal case regarding himself. She also talks about how bad Kavanaugh is on immigrants' rights, age discrimination, the Endangered Species Act, and a number of other issues. Here in San Francisco, Willie Brown served as the mayor. Before that, he was the Speaker of the State Assembly. He is a very colorful, roguish figure who has long been a public ladies' man. He is married to his wife of 40, 50, I don't know how many years, but he is always seen publicly with a young girl of Russian origins who is his secretary and companion. He has openly carried on affairs while he was mayor of San Francisco. He fathered a child with a woman who was not his wife, who had been his campaign fundraiser. And he's very open about it. And on one hand, I respect the fact that he didn't play games when the press asked him about it. He just said, yeah, next question. And nobody tried to run Willie Brown out of the office of mayor of San Francisco for failing to comport with family values. So he now has a Sunday column in the San Francisco Chronicle. And yesterday he said there's a silent force emerging in American politics, and Trump is tapping into it. He said, while the pundits and my fellow Democrats rightly blast Trump for his statement about how that young men are, it's a very scary time for them. They could be accused of something that they're not guilty of. So Brown writes, while the pundits may rightly blast Trump for his statement, I have to tell you that most men I talk with are privately glad he said it. Men, even liberal men, tell me they have stopped talking about the Kavanaugh hearings even at home out of fear of being shredded by their wives or daughters. The slightest questioning of Blasey Ford's testimony is tantamount to being a Trump supporter. Raising any point in Kavanaugh's defense is just as bad. The result is that most men have gone completely silent. Well, Mr. Brown, I respectfully disagree. The only people who've gone silent are people who have guilt over predatory behavior or being a philanderer. People who don't carry that baggage, even if they're male, haven't been silent about Kavanaugh or about Ford or about any of the other accusers, including the men who have challenged the credibility of Brett Kavanaugh. And, Mr. Brown, you probably shouldn't comment on issues like this. Great email came in from Linda Lewis. She's a longtime listener, subscriber to this podcast, a former whistleblower. And she offered some really, really bright comments about the Kavanaugh saga. She says, Republicans insisted that Kavanaugh be held to a criminal standard of proof. That's not the usual hearing standard, but the charges against Kavanaugh were not usual at a hearing. However, if one uses a criminal standard of proof, one is obliged to provide the due process elements that go along with that. That means a balanced process in which both sides can subpoena evidence, both witnesses and documents, and examine them in a public venue. Instead, The defense, Kavanaugh's Republican protectors, absurdly controlled the process. They blocked testimony by all but one witness, hid most of the evidence from public view, falsely suggested that witness testimony is not evidence, allowed the defendant to obstruct justice by refusing to answer questions, stacked the jury with individuals biased in favor of the defendant, and allowed the most abusive influence and threats since the circus trial of Sam Shepard in 1954. The president himself sought to influence opinion and directly influence the investigation. Republicans' due process was, in summary, an outrageous fraud on the American people. Whether the claims against Kavanaugh were true or not, and whether he spoke truthfully or not, were simply irrelevant to confirming him. That violated the spirit, at least, of the U.S. Constitution. Linda continues, none of the above is a surprise to federal employees who've been through the judicial process set up specifically for them. I went through the process with whistleblower and civil rights complaints and a security clearance appeal. It was always the same. Plaintiffs' witnesses were not questioned, key documents were hidden, rejected, or ignored, and representatives of management routinely engaged in improper influence of witnesses. And in this case, for the first time, the federal government has displayed its contempt for due process on a public stage for all to see. That alarms me because it means those who've operated in the shadows for decades no longer fear public disapproval. As both parties endorse increasingly abusive policies, the last hope for government restraint has fallen. And finally today, yes, I'm running a little long in the podcast, but I have one more item, and this I think is really important. Bob Kincaid is a radio host and podcaster from West Virginia. I've encountered him many times in Washington and other places when we congregate in what's called Radio Row. And he wrote an important post on Facebook the other night. He said, West Virginia Democrats, here's the bottom line. Will you vote like an American or a West Virginian? What do I mean? There's only one scenario in which Democrats take control of the Senate. It requires every Senate Democrat up for re-election to win their respective races. I am terminally serious when I say that our nation's fate rests upon wresting control from the Make America Great Again types in both houses of Congress. This means, as odious, untrustworthy, shamelessly self-promoting, and all-around duplicitous as Joe Manchin is, he must win if our country is to be saved from a Trump emboldened by a midterm victory. If you vote like an American first, you cast a vote for Manchin in the hope that we can get even a single vote majority in the Senate. If, on the other hand, you choose your state's politics over your nation, you may decide to withhold your vote and perhaps play a role in finally ending the slimy, self-involved career of Joe Manchin, but at a horrible price for our nation. He goes on to say it's the difference between a certainty and a possibility. 5-4 majorities can change more easily than a 6-3 or a 7-2 one. As such, I plan to vote for the sake of my nation first. And that means, as filthy as I will feel doing it, voting for Joe Manchin. Well, I think that puts it in great perspective. From one of the hollers in West Virginia. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. You're free to share it far and wide, and you'll find it on YouTube. I remain Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.